jumping straight in here. I don't know about you, but it sounds like you also struggle with a bit of imposter syndrome, as I do a lot, which I think comes with being a woman doing business, some weird conditioning that we have. But for me, it feels like I have imposter syndrome because, like, I didn't study fashion. So I call myself a fashion designer, but I didn't go to fashion school. I went to art school. So there's a bit of that too. But
yeah.
Happy birthday, PPHH. Thank you.
Just quickly, not to skim over that imposter syndrome thing, because I think it's super important. I've had a lot of thought about this as, like, my old life in the corporate world and being in that 15 years of radio and still at 15 years after it, feeling like an imposter in some rooms and some areas, but then witnessing people that I wouldn't think would have imposter syndrome have it. And I used to definitely think it was a female-orientated affliction and that we naturally go into that space because of many reasons. But I also think for me personally, I realized it was at its core of, like, just wanting to be really good at what you do and then constantly surrounding yourself with people that challenge you to do better or you admire or you're mentoring. So naturally you've got people on a pedestal. So in contrast, while you're next to them, you're like, oh God, I'm not as good as them. So, like, people trying to, like, you naturally feel like an impossible.
Yeah, well, it comes from, it sounds like for you, it comes from, like, constantly wanting to better yourself and just not being happy with, like, where you are right now and just constantly pushing yourself, which I think also, yeah, I feel the same, that same feeling. I think it just comes from, like, a hunger to just do more, explore more, just continue. And I think that's, like, you have to have that, especially when you're, like, when you run your own business or anything, you need to be that driving energy for everyone else too. So, like, let me just backtrack for everyone listening. So this is Carlan from PPHH Store. And they have just, you've just had your 10-year anniversary party this weekend. How was that? Yeah. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you so much. It was, honestly, this sounds maybe a little bit trite, but it was actually the most humbling experience because, you know, being there for 10 years, I cannot believe it's gone that quickly.
Oh, my God.
And it's blowing my mind. And I remember one of the original people that was at one of our mentors there who started Country Road in Australia. His name's Steve Bennett. He's, like, one of our mentors. Yeah. I remember him early on saying to us, if you can survive 5 years, you got it. You don't expect anything good to start happening until 5 years in. And it was, like, this room full of people and he was there and all these people from this, like, collective group of people that we've known for 10 years. And they just constantly kept saying to us, we're just so happy you're here. We so love what you do. We so what you do. And essentially we're a shop that just people just buy stuff from and we put pretty things into a, you know, a space that we love and all this kind of stuff. But it was really humbling to hear people talk about how much that meant to people and how much of a sense of a community created. So I was pretty overwhelmed the whole time. And also it was just a banger of a party. It was so much fun. Everyone had a blast. So, yeah, it feels really accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely, and very much deserved. Like, I can remember, you know, meeting you, like, in Japan, like, 8 years ago when I just started out and you guys coming to buy Nigel Caborn and, like, I don't know. I think what you've done for our corner of fashion in Australia, you definitely were trailblazers. You definitely were pioneers. And I think I could see so many people follow suit, I think definitely because of what you guys put out there and what you guys have carved out. Like, honestly, I think that's where I think your store and women's wear align so much, is because, like, we're just doing, we're not following the crowd. We're just really, really, really believe in this line that we're taking, and, like, we're just going for it. And people completely see that. And I think people appreciate that and respect that, because it takes a lot of guts to freaking, it's a high risk. It's so high risk. And, you know, but it's also comes from, like, just not wanting to do what everyone else is doing, and just really appreciate, like, really taking the level of appreciation for product to a new level, like, that I don't think existed in Australia before what you were doing, especially in Melbourne. I think that, you know, I think there's a few stores who kind of, like, we've all come up at the same time, but I think, like, really, I think you guys took huge risks, and I think, like, it's definitely paid off, but it's not been easy, like, an easy run, like, when you're kind of the outlier, or when you're kind of pushing something new, like, it's a uphill battle for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and look, thank you so, so much for those exceptional kind words. And, like, I don't even know if we were the trailblazers, but we definitely, you're right, just saw something that we really, really believed in. And it was such a meeting of minds. When I first met you, I remember being weirdly so intimidated by you, because I was like, this girl has her shit together. She knows what she's doing, and she's so creative and so assured. And then we met each other and felt like we, you know, we completely got on from the get-go. We were very comfortable with each other, but only, you know, you were also so kind and generous, and all we wanted to do was share and, you know, elevate both of our stuff. And I so resonated with women's wear, and it was the first brand we decided upon when we opened the women's arm of the business, and
that
it was
such an honor.
So aligned.
Yeah.
It was so aligned. It was so perfect. We were so chuffed. And, you know, your latest season of stock just arrived, and we're going to do a big photo shoot today. And I talked to, you know, our managers and stuff like that, and they're all just like, get it out there, get it quick, because you've got these super fans waiting for it in our store. So,
amazing.
You know, like, we have this kind of thing of years now of people just building it up. But, you know, what I think was the hardest part, like you said, where it's not been easy to do this, is it came with education.
Yeah.
So there's, like, so much stuff in what we put forward. Fashion can be a fickle thing, and we talked about it from a men's versus women's space when we started. And a lot of the guys were, like, saying, you know, but women are so seasonal and they just buy according to trend. And I said, well, I don't think that's true. But there was a huge education piece on justifying price aligned with story and where things came from and why they did. And Chris used to put it me perfectly, and it was the best way I could put it back to customers. When they would come in and ask, and they go, woof, why is that $400? And I was like, well, you probably should be asking not why something is so expensive, but asking why something would be so cheap.
Mm.
So what I can do is tell you exactly why that cost that garment does, because of this story, the person who makes it, what goes into building it. And, you know, it's not always this 100% hippy-dippy ethical version of something, but there's definitely a lot more ethical thought gone into making these garments.
That's a massive conversation about sustainability, and, like, I definitely have my own approach to what I think would be deemed sustainable versus what I do not. When I think there's a lot of, like, we can go into this, it's a huge wormhole, but, like, you know, there are a lot of consumers who have wonderful intent in buying, in supporting sustainable brands. But unfortunately, like, this word sustainable has become such a corporate greenwashing kind of, like, word that, okay, let's break it down. Let's go into this. Let's say, okay, I'm going to take this back to like just fabric suppliers, because, you know, nowadays, if you're a brand, you have to have some kind of, you have to have a stance, your sustainability stance. You are making steps to make sustainable products. But, you know, let's start from textiles. There are so many textile mills in the world who have understood that it's very important to create so-called sustainable textiles for their you know, for their customers who are the brands. And, you know, there are things like the recycled ocean plastic fabrics that are deemed sustainable, or recycled cotton or organic cotton. Well, how much of this textile is being produced? How is it that like a mill is producing a sustainable material on such a huge scale that is just not sustainable as it is? Like, you know, for example, let's take organic cotton, for example. Like, how much water does it take to grow cotton? Mm. How much land is needed to grow cotton? What are the conditions of, like, the farmers that are growing this cotton?
See, and this is where I think, sorry to, like, cut you off. This is where the wormhole starts, because I literally, like, you start to tap into that and you realize the education and the self-education of what it is and what people put out there to showcase what their sustainable credentials are very different things. Like, you have to learn so much, and ideally at the end of the day we realized no one is perfect. We tossed up about putting anything of, like, we never use the term ethical or sustainable in any of our commentary, because I know the minute we do that, somebody could absolutely pick us apart for one sector of our business that isn't 100% under those guides, because it's such a broad spectrum of a word.
Yeah, which is so sad, because I'm the same. I don't call myself a sustainable ethical brand, even though that is what I spend most of my time, you know, overseeing with the brand.
Yeah, and I think you have to have an understanding in your own mindset what you thought you believe to be sustainable and ethical. And Chris, for us, it was from the gestations of PPHH, Pickings and Parry at the start, was that everything had to have a story. And the story meant that somebody had put thought into this garment. Definitely wasn't mass produced, because we wanted something that was a niche that somebody felt like they could find only with us. So it meant small production, usually done by people that were craftsmen or had a skill set or a trade that we felt was a dying trade. Mm. And we wanted to support the people that were doing it. So our version of sustainable and ethical was like uplifting smaller supplied brands that were supporting trades that were dying, that had a story behind it, and they thought about the garment and where it came from. It's similar to you, how in all your collections you honor a piece of history, a person that represents what you're building your arc from. And that's not to say that's not true in every fashion. Somebody can have inspiration from something, but how you put your thought into that garment and then how it's made off the back of who you're working that collection towards, for us is really important. And it's, you know, really that's for us the sustainable thing, because when I go into that rabbit hole of where the fabric and the textiles and how those things are made and the mass production and the affordability for the everyman at the end of the day for that garment, it's almost too much information and nothing's perfect. A girlfriend of mine is actually starting to and she's going to kill me if she hears this, because I can't remember the name of her website, but it's basically for brands to be able to go on and put themselves on there, and it's like a sustainability checklist. So people can go in there and actually see, well, this is a brand that claims to be sustainable, but this is all the sections and areas they're doing it in, rated of like, you know, yes, they do this in their textile manufacturing, but they let you down here. And so you can kind of see and judge. Because I think at the end of the day, everybody's version of what a sustainable ethical brand is very different to them. And then it comes down to also, then you get into a guilt cycle of the everyday consumer just not being able to afford that necessarily all the time. And, you know.
But it also has to do with like the frequency that people are buying and consuming, just based on like the frequency of how many fashion cycles there are in the year now compared to like 10, 20 years ago. Like, it's sped up so much. So our idea of like, oh, affordability is also kind of predicated on how often we're buying clothes now too. Whereas like just, I think what Pickings and Perry started out being was it's kind of like its roots come from like, you know, owning that one really good piece that lasts you for, you can, a piece that you can actually hand down to your kids, or like, you know, it's something that ages with beauty and becomes better with age, and like it's that piece that, like, you know,
100%. I mean, it was at its simplest form, Chris was sick of buying, he was in his 30s, he knew he liked a certain kind of a white t-shirt, a beautiful pair of jeans and a nice jacket, and particularly the white t-shirt was like, he's like, I find something that I really like and it lasts five washes. He's like, why can't these t-shirts, you know, he's like, I'm happy to pay more if that one will just kind of grow with me. And it kind of came from as simple as just having a really good white t-shirt. And it's so funny now, the popularity of The Bear, and you know, the TV show The Bear, have you heard of this? It's this really fantastic drama based on a guy that inherits a sandwich shop in Philadelphia. He's a really top class chef and he has to do it. Anyway, it's great, very popular TV show. But in this show, he wears one of two white t-shirts, a Whitesville, which is a Japanese brand white t-shirt, but a Mersby Schwannon 215 t-shirt. And it has gone so popular because this is this t-shirt that this guy wears in The Bear. So we get everyone coming to the shop going, have you got a 215? And we've got, like, you know, all of a sudden people are, there's TikToks around that people are going, why is The Bear's t-shirt so expensive? And they're doing the education piece that we've been doing for 10 years. It's like, well, here's the circular mills that they're made on, and there's loop wheel, and it's very specific, and it's designed to last you. And it's, they're telling the story that we've been telling for years of why a t-shirt is so expensive, because it's built to last and it's built in a different way than most manufacturing's done. But the irony is, when we had 215s, we couldn't sell them to most people because you have to be built like a little nugget to be able to wear them. But this guy now is like, everyone just wants to look like this guy in The Bear, so it's just gone crazy. But funnily enough, it's done this great job for us on educating people of why you should pay a little bit more for something as simple as a t-shirt. So we'll take it in pop culture. It's wild.
That actually, I wrote a little list of questions, and that's beautiful. That's a beautiful segue into this question. Do you feel that the brand's roots are still firmly cemented in menswear, or has time changed? Well, it obviously has with the opening of Heffernan and Hare, but like, let's go on that journey of like the roots in heritage wear, wanting that beautiful, you know, white t-shirt that lasts more than five washes, lasts, you know, a good amount of time. Like, how has that journey evolved into now, having a woman's clientele and opening that woman's side of the store? And like, it has evolved. How long has it been since you started women's?
It would 5 years.
5 years,
yeah. 5 years. So, so I think when we started, we were very much in line with a heritage workwear fashion point. Think Chris with his curly moustache, you know, wearing a vest and railway worker inspired jeans and boots, and, you know, very much that aesthetic. But him wanting to, since, you know, he's British, he grew up in a place where men really did spend a bit more money on clothing than men traditionally in my upbringing in Sydney in Australia would spend, and fashion was important and stuff. But he had a vocabulary and an encyclopedia of brands that I'd never even understood. It's like Nigel Caborn. I'd not heard of Nigel Caborn until Chris brought him up. So, you know, he really invested and researched heavily brands that he loved. But it was definitely of an aesthetic and a look that was of a time 10 years ago in Melbourne particularly that was very on fashion.
And but also folk music.
Mumford and Sons. That. Very Mumford.
I love that. That period of time, like, I was in my prime. I just loved it. Like, the storytelling. Yeah, it was a storytelling. It was a very romantic storytelling period of time.
Yeah, and crafts were going huge here. Yeah. You know, it was about people having bars where going back to reverting to classic ways of baking even a cocktail, or food was really being steeped in it. So every part of kind of pop culture or culture in general was like working with it. And, you know, it really, really did make sense. But as we've kind of moved on and grown, I see there's a modernization of the Pickings and Parry brand. And someone asked me this the other day about how much do you think the divide of the sell, the popularity, Pickings, Parry versus Stefanair. I still think we probably do a 70-30 split, that Pickings and Parry, the male side of the brand, does dominate, purely because we started to have a female clientele early on before we opened the women's wear, because that androgynous way of dressing certainly is something that I subscribe to. So it was an aesthetic that was easy to kind of build into this unisex framework. So when we opened the Heffernan Hair and wanted female clothes, it was very much something that I didn't want to go, like, I couldn't buy flowy dresses and put a very feminine aesthetic necessarily very easily on the Pickings and Parry brand. We slowly built it, and I pushed the boundaries as we've gone, and we've learned over those 5 years where our female clientele is prepared to be pushed and not. But ultimately, the menswear part of the business does drive the overall aesthetic. So, yeah, the evolution now I see with PP is less heritage, but those pieces are certainly there. Classic denim, aero leather jackets have been there with us from the start. You know, we've got barber jackets that are very classic aesthetic, and, you know, all of these kind of things that are steeped in your basics, but there'll always be these head pieces where we kind of challenge our customer to see where they would go and what things work and what don't. And there's, it never ceases to amaze me, Lauren, how many brands every year I go, well, surely there can't be another brand out there that does something brilliant that we've never seen before. But, you know, there's like, you know, we recently brought on Cardo, which are these amazing guys from London, and they've got, you know, Indian heritage and Indian roots, and they've taken everything back into India to do traditional ways of making garments. And I think, you know, not long ago that may have been an unethical, unsustainable, bad word to have products made in India because it was associated with mass production. But these guys are taking people that are traditional, like women that are crafts people in their own right of like how they sew, and in their garment they honour the women. So they've got hand sewing these garments with pictures of the women who are doing it. Like, it's just the way they've thought that through, and the beauty of the garments just still blows my mind. So every time somebody is doing something more, and I think the biggest evolution I've seen in the last 10 years is people understanding that they fast fashion is a bad word, and it is becoming really unpopular, and people want to buy something that's going to grow old with them and look beautiful, and, you know, they can invest in a piece and it makes more sense. I feel like I've gone on a ramble there and gone on five different tangents. But, the evolution of the brand has been great.
I think, there have been so many new brands popping up that are just so surprising. And, yeah, the beauty of the internet means that, like, a new brand is given more, like, agency to just be independent and just start and, like, it's so viable nowadays to, like, become a viable business as a new brand, thanks to the internet and thanks to, like, the network that it brings us. Especially through the pandemic, I think, like, a lot of new brands did pop up because a lot of shops and brands closed down and a lot of new stores and brands popped up. Do you want to go into, like, how did you guys fare with the pandemic, and how was that as a business, as an independent business, how did that whole experience affect you? What happened? What happened?
So we ultimately at the tail end of it, I would say, were very much one of the lucky ones. But it wasn't just luck that was just, you know, blind luck. It was built over the years. So I've thought about this a bit because I witnessed it from the outers, because I was working in radio at the time and having a separate kind of experience in commercial radio side of things, but seeing our business and what it was going through. So Chris had done a very good job about building this community up around our space. And for anybody who has been to our space or hasn't been, just probably better to describe it, we always thought bricks and mortar was very important, and our shop and our presentation of our space is very important, so people feel like and experience our brand and everything that we are in one space. So we have a barber shop in there, which is fantastic because it, you know, creates liveliness in there and place for men particularly and women to come and sit, have a whiskey, have some banter, you know, walk around the space. But it's very important architecturally how that space was. So we've built this community coming in and being able to share their stories and be with us and be part of our extended family through that. So when the pandemic hit, we saw an outpouring of worry from everybody that they were worried that we weren't going to survive. And so we probably had some people invest in us in ways that really surprised us, would turn up and even, you know, looked after our barbers and reached out to them and sent them bottles of whiskey and all these kind of beautiful little things they did. But ultimately also we were in a very lucky position to have a majority of our client base were 40-plus-year-old professionals who were still working or weren't hamstrung too much by COVID. And then all of a sudden something like money that they used to would have spent on going a big overseas trip or going out to dinners and all of these things that were experience-based stuff that they used to doing, that was taken away and they had expendable cash. And the Australian government did put a lot into a JobKeeper money. So the people, funnily enough, had cash.
Everyone got a stimulus package.
Yeah, and it really benefited us. All of a sudden people were wanting to invest in us because they didn't want to see us go, so we got a lot more big-ticket items. And don't get me wrong, we weren't thriving, but we were definitely surviving, and we were able to look after our workers in a really good way. And we just wanted to get creative and constantly put stuff out there. So, yeah, it was hard, but we got through it and we learned a lot of lessons from it. But, yeah, it was we were very lucky, I think, to maintain.
I think during that time it was really interesting for me as a supplier to see the different markets and how they were dealing with the lockdowns. And I think definitely countries like Australia with the stimulus package, the Australian government acting pretty quickly on that and keeping everyone secure in their, like, you know, housing and just being able to feed themselves or, like, you know, continue running their business as well. Everything was on hold. You know, there were also, like, you know, I'm not here to praise the Australian government. I think they prolonged the lockdown, like, way too long.
It was
chaos.
And but, we are paying for that stimulus package now, you know, like cost of living and how people are going through inflation right now, like the after effect is probably being more felt now than it was then.
I think from a business perspective, like the effects of COVID is actually much more hard, more difficult this year than it was in the last 2-3 years for sure, in my perspective.
It definitely. And did you find that it, like, you already had a very good online presence and game and you understood what that was, but it certainly made us very quickly upskill and understand the power of online. And I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, wow, the internet, you know, like how it is, but how you could find your space in that and you had to use that. And we always thought kind of our bricks and mortar was more important than online, and that totally flipped during that time.
I mean, you're not building your business planning on a pandemic, a like once in a lifetime pandemic to happen, you know. I would say actually that there was one year that everyone had like their best year sales wise online. Mm-hmm. That was for sure. But honestly, wholesale kept me afloat through. I'm still a predominantly wholesale brand, and wholesale has always been my core part of my business because I'm small and like I don't have the kinds of marketing budgets that, you know, larger stores have for nowadays. During the pandemic people were on their phones a lot more. Definitely they were engaging on online content a lot more. There was like that was a great year for online engagement. But I think after that, I think it was 2021 maybe, after that year, I think that the algorithms changed, you know, Reels, like TikTok became like such a huge thing. And if you didn't have a marketing strategy, which I didn't really, I was kind of like doing everything intuitively. I wasn't playing that game. If you didn't have a marketing strategy, like you fell behind, which is what I am feeling now, is that like I'm falling behind with like the growth and everything, because I'm like, I wasn't in it to play a game, but I probably should have been more strategic with my marketing strategy. And I'm sort of now like, you know, getting onto it a bit more now. But I think like in terms of engagement and growth, like in the last year or so, they've just been like, there's influencers, brands have like completely skyrocketed their followings, just, you know, being smart about their marketing strategy and putting boosting posts, putting in dollars to really like, now it's, I think, the game with social media, now that it's owned by Facebook, you know, like Instagram and Facebook is, I think, yeah, it's all about how many marketing dollars you set aside for engagement and promoting posts and playing and being consistent, playing, doing reels and just really being savvy. I think you have to be a lot more savvy than you used to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it's not about discovering that medium and how you can play with it. People know now. Like, yeah. And there are, we get approached literally 3 times a day from random people saying, I noticed your website. I've seen your socials. I think I could boost you. And this is what we're going to do. And Chris and I always, my marketing background and advertising and sales background always made me a believer in it. And, you know, understanding a market strategy could work. But we were also like, well, what do we do if we go and boost everything? Like, do we have the inventory to back this up? Like, what if things go crazy? Like, it's you and me. Like, do we? Can I be packing stuff all the time? So you kind of have to set your business up for what you believe in, that if it is successful like you want it to be, that you can actually pull that off. Because the worst thing is for you to have this horrible custom experience off the back of it. And today, funnily enough, is the first meeting we're taking with a social media and digital agency to go, okay, we're ready now. I think we're ready. We know what we're kind of doing. We know we're online through COVID because, we had those crazy bumps of online sales. Yeah. Like, we've got data now to kind of understand all of that and know how we can move forward with it. And, yes, you can be savvy and, yes, you can be creative and you're scheming all those things, but at the end of the day, it pays to have somebody who knows what they're doing within that space. To make it work, because I think it's gone those days of like just randomly going viral or, you know,
but at the all same those time, things. Like, I'm not, I've never studied marketing or I've never studied business or fashion, but I've just learnt along the way. And like from what I have understood and learnt along the way is that the most important thing is understanding your customers and like who they are and like what kind of, what interests they have and like, just really knowing your customer, which a lot of brands and stores don't really understand, especially the online stores, the big online players. I don't think they understand who their customer are. I think they know who they want their customer to be, their like idealized customer, but they don't actually know who they're dealing with. And I think as you pointed out, the follow-up, the customer service follow-up and really like connecting with your customer, even for an online store, especially for an online store, having that follow-up, having that personable contact point when people are asking questions or wanting to like track their parcel or like when, you know, there are things that cannot be automated and there are strategies that cannot be just, you can't just throw money at something to grow something when it's not the right audience for you or, you know.
And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, I think most brands know what their ideal customer is. Like they know what they want the customer to be, but in reality what that is not true. When I stepped back into this business most important thing for me was to work on the retail floor again. I was like, I want to be on the floor like at least twice a day, because the only way I could understand is watching people come into that store, engage with our products and their reactions to them, how they like to be treated, how they wanted to do it and how they bought. And, you know, I think even that is changing my buying, just from watching somebody walk in through the front door, what pulls them in through the window, but then what they see in store and how they engage with that. It's been the most fascinating thing. But I also see we have this beautiful team of people, for whatever reason, how we've managed to pull it off, I don't know, but they care about our business almost as much as we do. And their customer service and that service they provide is the thing that stands us, sets us apart from everywhere else. And this fine line of not bombarding people with an online message and a constant thing of content and a constant thing that isn't relevant to them just because we think it's great, but something that is like meaningful, something they'll take away and they're really thankful for. And when shit hits the fan, being there and being understanding and empathetic and realizing that it's, you know, a personal experience for them. So all of those things, learning those things in the past thing is the most important. I don't know how a purely online business does it, because to not see or engage with your customer in person, I think I'd really struggle with it.
I think it would be extremely stressful, like just to have such big budgets to just like
put it out there in the ether and hope.
Yeah, I do work with some of the big online players, and it's a completely different ballgame. Yeah, like for me, actually, as a predominantly wholesale brand, I get all of my data and feedback from my retailers. Like some of them, there are some really, really incredibly dedicated retailers who give me reports, like will handwrite reports at the end or the beginning of the season saying, I love this, you know, this, the sleeve length for my customer is like too short, or like, you know, because I have a few different demographics of customers who are wearing women's wear. You know, predominantly we have an age group from like 30 to mid 40s, and then our next age group is about like 50 plus. Like we have some 80-year-old customers. I love them.
Yeah, love that.
I love them.
Yeah, I love that.
But you know, that's a big range of women. You know, there's a big range of ages and women and sizes and fits and lifestyles. So, you know, you can't get it right for every single person, but you can go off feedback of what this demographic is really vibing with and what this age group is really loving. So, like, it's not dictating all of my designs, but I take all of that into account when I'm, especially with clothes, it's all about fit. So, you know, when it comes to fit, for like how high a waist is, and like I myself, the older I get, I don't want to wear like tight, high-waisted things when I go out to dinner. I want to eat that big bowl of pasta and just feel like so comfortable. Yeah. But then at the same time, I also want to look great and not feel like I'm in a potato sack. So it's like a fine line between the two of them. But it's all about, I think the moral of the story for me, the success of good retail is like just really getting, like being on that floor, shop floor, and really like.
Yeah, and getting never think about that, how honest you would just thrive from probably getting that feedback. That's something that's really, I'm so happy to give you that feedback because, it is so true.
It's a massive ego check too.
Yeah, look.
Always. But it's good.
Yeah.
And then you get rewarded for it by seeing the happy customers, like the different kinds of customers wearing the stuff and the big smiles on their face. I get like some emails from customers who are like, this women's wear coat, like I was looking at it for so long, but it was so outrageous for my style. But I went ahead and got it, and I've taken it on my trip overseas to Europe. Aww. And you know, like this is why we do it.
It makes me so
know?
Happy. It's so true. It's so true. People are like, oh God, you're so lame. It's like, honestly, there's nothing more happy for me than when I hear like positive feedback from a customer.
Yeah.
And like, love it. Not only like they love us, but they're like, yeah, I took this thing and I feel amazing in it and everything. And I know people will kind of poo-poo the whole fashion thing, but for me personally, and it's probably why I love it, fashion has always been a sense of armor for me, or a representation of being individual and different.
What does fashion, like what does dress and what does fashion mean to you as a woman?
Yeah, so this is going to sound, this, please don't think this is a violin moment, because I actually have always thought it's being my strength. And I am not somebody, I was never the pretty girl growing up in high school, wasn't known for being pretty. I've been strong, athletic, smart, and fun all the time.
You've been a professional sportswoman.
Yeah, so I've done all of those things, but I, you know, at some point in this stupid, like, female brain of mine, it was like, I'm not the prettiest in the room, so I better have something better to back it up, which was, in my mind, quickly, you've got to have a good, interesting personality, be interesting and kind, and then also be different. And the biggest way that I could be different was through fashion. And the more exciting that I kind of lent into just who cares what you look like as long as you walk into a room looking different, the more fun I could have with fashion. And then I kind of got into this whole thing of like, God, yeah, it's like a self-expression, and it's like,
yeah,
who I represent myself and how I feel comfortable. And like, you know, it is armor. Like, there is times when it's like I can have be having a horrible day, but put something on and it will be my armor for the day and represent, you know. And I just think it's so much fun too.
Yeah.
And, you know, my husband Chris is such a good dresser, and it's not like just wears a set, you know, a coat that looks good and everything like that. He's interesting and he thinks about it and he tests boundaries, and I love that. Love to see it, you know, and I think it makes somebody fascinating. So for me, it's always just been fun, different, being an individual, and just this kind of work of art while being also armor at the same time. That's what it all means to me. And, you know, yeah, I always thought if I could make a living with it, God, how much fun would that be? So fun. Yeah.
Let's go on to what you're doing for your 10-year anniversary. It's very important because it's a big, you've taken on a huge project. So, you know, you've forged, the store has like really developed a lot of meaningful partnerships, you know, with different brands over the years. And for your, so for those who are listening, for PPHH's anniversary, they've collaborated with, do you want to tell us? I think.
So how it was born was when I left commercial radio, my previous life, to step back into the business full time, which was more just over a year ago. Probably there was also a sense of like, I really have to prove my chops of like why I'm back into this business and what I can do. And we knew the 10th birthday was coming up, and I just got really excited about doing a project for it. And our amazing manager in the shop just said, how good would it be to do some collaborations for our 10th birthday? And one of the other full-time workers in our business, Daniel, who's really creative guy, he just said, how cool would it be to do 10 outfits with 10 brands to celebrate 10 years? And I just loved it. I was like, that is unreal. Yes, let's do a whole outfit, 10 brands with 10 collaborations. And that'd be a great way that we could give back to also not only our brands, but also, you know, align with our customer. So I started to put the feelers out of the people that we'd want to work with, Your Good Self obviously being, you know, up there at the top of the list, where people that could also do that and turn it around production-wise, but also happy to collaborate with us. And we thought, you know, maybe people could just not, this is just not viable. But pleasantly to our surprise, I think we reached out to only 12, and only two of them said they couldn't do it, and everyone else was, you know,
amazing.
Yeah, on board.
Yeah.
So what we've decided to do is we turned 10 in September this month, and we're going to do 10 collaborations with 10 brands and drop them over 10 weeks. So every week we're dropping a new one. So timely. Your week is this week.
Amazing.
So what I'm we've got, it's probably easy to talk about your brand. So your listeners probably understand a little bit more. The classic women's wear, good old what's his face flight pant that is not only, you know, in our world unisex, but also just one of our definitely most popular, but also personal faves. We all just decided that it was like it'd be perfect to do that if we could do something in an indigo and then badge it up in our with both our labels. And you have been so generous with that's the thing that surprises most, the generosity of people that were happy to incorporate our brand with theirs.
I'm sure this is the same for your brands, but like I'm just so honored that you have really believed in women's wear from day one, and you've always solidly you've grown my business in not just Melbourne but Australia, and you know, like that for a small brand like mine, that means that's everything to me. So you know, when you're turning 10 and you want to do something together, I'm like, woohoo, you know, where's the party? Like, you know, I just like, I'll come early. I'll bring chips, you know? So,
I love you so much.
This is just, it was so fun. And also, like, I love that you chose the Freedom Flight trousers because, like, yeah, they've become, that was a project during the pandemic that we started that has just become its own, almost like its own business on its own.
Yeah.
It's become everybody's favorite pants and, like, just all different shapes and sizes. People have been loving it, men, women. It's a shape of pant that just suits so many people.
Yeah. Ben being the one that had been in the shop so much, our manager, who, you know, Ben was just so like the flight pant, man. Like it is the most popular by far. We all love it. And, you know, isn't it funny, just this love for like a garment that you could do, but the process of this whole project has been wonderful too for me, reconnecting with suppliers and people that I know, working with them and being really earnest about what we can do. We've got some amazing stuff. So we've had a high mat beanie that the guys made it in our Heaven and Hair colorway so far. And the other collaboration that we just also dropped was with APFR, which was they're a Japanese brand who do incense and fragrance and stuff like that. So they were visiting. We knew they were coming out to Australia to have a little visit to suss out things. So we collected a whole range of local flora from Victoria and Melbourne. So when they came here, we could give them all these scents to create a fragrance. And then we took them on a nature walk around Melbourne, which was really fruitful, actually. It was wonderful. So nice. They went back to their lab in Japan, made up this beautiful scent that incorporated some of this stuff, and then called it Gertrude, which is the street that our shop is on. And it was such a truly holistic, you know, collaboration. It was really collaborative. And the same thing with you. Like these, it took us months to come to where we wanted to be. We all agreed on it. The whole experience for me has just been so rewarding to see these products go out into the world now. And yes, they seem like just products, but it's like a love note to our brands. Like that we love what you guys do with, you know, and to be able to even be part of that and see what you guys create is just so exciting and wonderful. And, you know, hopefully this lives on and we get to do, and there's an excuse to do it all over again and do more of them in the future. It's been good.
So I've got a list. So you've done Haymart, you're doing women's wear, you've done APFR, you're going to do Mersby Schwanen, Knickerbocker, Sanders, Ayam Socks. Is that pronounced the right way?
Ayami.
Ayami Socks, Tender Co, Papa Nui, and Lady White. I think they're like all your your staple, you know, core brands really that you've collaborated with. Yes, I love that story about developing the Australian botanical scent.
Good. There's some wild things in there, you know, to give you a heads up, because like, you know, it's not too secretive that we can release it, but things, simple things like Lady White have done a t-shirt for us in the exact Pantone that the Heffernan & Hare walls are painted in store. Oh, cool. So it's like a little bit of that is going in. We've got Tendico, which are doing mugs for us, and they are hand-kilned and made by an 80-year-old potter in the UK. And we sent local fauna to him from around the area. So he's hand sketched into these mugs. It's a tawny frog-mouthed owl, a fruit bat, a local, which is a very big part of Melbourne. And the third animal, oh my God, a ringtail possum, a little ringtail possum into these mugs. And it's just wild to see where these things kind of went from. Some of them are really not even just obvious, but like, you know, really beautiful things that we've been excited to do. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Autumn Winter 23. I mean, Autumn Winter 23 would have been your kind of first season back buying, was it?
Yeah.
Did you have – what was your approach to buying?
So I think for Ben and Chris – it's very easy because they are old hands at what they can see and what they know excels and what experience is. And so they know where they can test boundaries, but they also have data in not only their brains, but, you know, in our systems to be able to tell them and inform them of how to buy. And it was interesting to watch them do a technical kind of approach to that. And I learned a lot from that, but being new back into the business, for me, it was very feel and touch, because to step into the Heffernan & Hare side of the business, being away from the buying for a few years and having somebody else who was in our business pre do a lot of the buying, her aesthetic probably is very different to mine.
Well, her personality is different too, you know.
Yeah.
Different people have different histories.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she did an amazing job, but there was a bit of what it felt like throwing shit against a wall to see what stuck, where we felt like, would our customer buy this? So there was a few years of just trying to figure it out. And for my mind, it was like really bringing back everything to make it a cohesive buy. Mm-hmm. And that meant bringing simpler styles, colors, and garments so that when a woman walks into the store, that something in the window brings her in, say you just have a statement piece of a jacket, or if it's a beautiful dress or something like that, that has then a link and a story to the rest of the garments in the range, where they're like, oh, because I like this dress, those pants seem to be something that kind of, you know, work with this and kind of have something that is aesthetically simple to it. I think we went a bit chaotic, and now it's, for me, simplifying and then knowing what our customer wants, which your brand particularly was a very big part of that, and a couple of other brands that have stood out for us. So I just wanted to bring everything back, make it simple. And we're going to try and make it cohesive for a while and then slowly incorporate a little bit more, you know, differentiation of, like, statement pieces and things like that to it. That seems like a really boring answer, but it was gut feel. It was getting back to kind of what we understood. And now I've been here for a year and a half and been on that shop floor and understanding my customer. I think that's a really – that was the right approach. So I'm really excited about now everything coming in to the shop and, you know, seeing how everyone reacts to it. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'll just finish off by saying, like, I think, like, to me, the joy of doing women's wear, designing women's clothing, and is that I'm constantly thinking about what it means to be a woman, what femininity means to me, and like how femininity means something completely different to so many people, so many women throughout history, like the women that I am inspired by through my collections. But just like the fact that it's not a one channel, one dimension thing. It's like it's got so many faces and feelings and experiences that to communicate that really takes so much nuance and understanding of different kinds of women. And I love that that experience of just being on the shop floor and just connecting with so many other women. That's like so cool.
It's fantastic.
Thank you so much for spending time on your extremely busy schedule of your opening of your 10-year anniversary, 10-week epic.
No,
launch.
Thank you for your time, because it's we are constantly talking about with you. I was like, how does she find the time to do everything and then create and find this time? You know, since I've got two beautiful young girls, daughters that are just phenomenal and keep us busy, a 5-year-old and a 15-month-old. And for me, it's just like one of these things where, people have asked us, would you do your own range? And I'm like, I just don't think I could find the time to create. And you're my stable example. I'm like, oh my gosh, she does so much. I don't know if I could do all of that.
At my age now, in my mid-30s, if I were to start a new brand now, I would be like, no. I think I had to. I started it in my mid-20s because, you have the energy.
You just have this blind faith that it's going to work out, and if you don't, it doesn't. It's all right. But thank you so much for taking the time. It's just been so wonderful to chat with you. As always, I love it. I love it.
So tell everyone how they can follow, connect, walk into your store, say hi.
That's so lovely. So yes, we should do this bit, shouldn't we? Yes. PPHH.store is where you can get all the lovely things online, and same on the Instagram handle. That's probably the best thing to get out.
Maybe there's some local people that are going to walk
store, in. Yeah. And then on Gertrude Street, it's 166 Gertrude Street in Fitzroy, Melbourne. Please come and see us and say hi, because we love meeting everyone. So, but then come in there. There's wonderful things in there. It's like a Willy Wonka's version of clothing, I think, in there. That's a weird way to put it, actually. I'm like, that's so